Good day, listeners and viewers. Welcome to this edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. We're glad to have you with us. My name is Jonathan, and I've got my friend and buddy here, Stephen Cervantes. So how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. I'm looking forward to God blessing another podcast.
Yes, we are excited to be here with you. I'd like to just dive in, Stephen, because, you know, we're going to talk about marriage. And I want to pass this off to you because you are, you know, the marriage doctor.
That is good. That is good, Jonathan. So, all right, on to marriage. Here we go, folks. Everybody that comes into counseling says the same thing. Their marital issue starts this way. Do you know what the line is? We don't communicate.
We have a communication. I was going to say we have a communication problem.
Yeah. We don't communicate. And I think, how'd you get here? How'd you get in the car? How'd you make the... We don't communicate. Everybody communicates. One of the rules of communication is you can't not communicate.
That's true.
Everybody's communicating.
I can't count the number of times that my wife has reminded me what a communication professor said to us when we were in college.
No, let's hear it. This is good.
90% of communication is nonverbal. She reminds me of that over the years.
And is that because you're making faces or grunting or pointing? Or
yeah. That's because funny. She's like, hey, your body language is not matching your words.
Oh, that's good. So we don't communicate, and I have to immediately decode that. What does that mean? Because it doesn't mean what you think it means. We are communicating all the time. Even if you're not talking, you're communicating, right? Silent treatment, that's communicating something. So if it's not a communication problem, then what is it? What's the problem? It's an immaturity problem or a self-centered problem or different expectations. Different wants, different needs, right? It's me running into you, all of my stuff running into all of your stuff, and we don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And we're two different people. So we're struggling to interact because, like, I'm a saver and you're a spender, or I like a neat house and you like to be comfortable and throw things around. And you know how that goes? Opposites, right? I work a lot. Hey, why don't you chill? Why do you work so much? I mean, opposites attract, okay? Because why? Do we need two of you? No, we don't need two of us.
Right.
We need somebody opposite of. So the guy that really works hard and is working to be successful, he'll find somebody that's less driven, right? And she's wowed by his drivenness, and he's wowed by her ability to rest. And so in the beginning, it's so attractive, the opposite. It's so comforting. You're so restful. I want to be like you, except I don't really. Or I would be like you.
You know what, though? The irony to me, though, is because I'm thinking back of when, you know, Elaine and I fell in love and all this, and kind of when anybody sort of falls in love,
yeah,
is, yes, I agree with you in the sense that opposites attract. But what's interesting is the power of that attraction is seemed to be strengthened when we find those little points of similarity. Oh, you think that? Yeah, me too. Do you believe that? Yeah, we believe the same, and we have the same ideas. Oh, you know what? We both want kids. That's great. And you almost get deceived into believing we're really so alike.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and then the thing is, you get married, and then of course enough time of living together, then you realize, wait a second. We are not nearly as alike as we sort of deceived ourselves into thinking we were, you know?
So my version of that is, I like Coke. You like Coke? I like pizza. You like pizza? We're so alike.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So the real question is, how do you live with a difficult person? Because everybody's difficult. Mm-hmm. Meaning they like what they like. They want what they want. They came from the story. They came from their past. There's their past. And so everybody is married to a difficult person. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how do I live with this difficult person? Isn't that really the question?
Yeah.
We're so different and we don't understand each other. The differences are starting to rub raw places on each other.
The first thought that comes to my mind is I heard there was a guy in my group that recently he was saying, you know, he said, I didn't take the advice that this counselor gave to me before my wife and I got married. He said, or he said, I didn't believe what this guy said to me.
Oh, I thought you, his advice was, said, run.
No, he said to me, he said, do you know who is going to be the most difficult person in your marriage? It's like, who? You. And so it was kind of like he was saying, you got to take a look at yourself for, yeah, like it's easy to look and find out, realize, yeah, right. I'm living with a difficult person, and not, yeah, realize that, well, actually, maybe the most difficult person you're living with in this relationship is yourself. Mm. You know, so I think it's a both and. It's like we got to look at our own difficulties as well as how do we live with the difficulties of this other person in our lives.
So in this opposite, marrying opposite, growth people find no growth people and get married. So it's like, I'm always trying to grow. It's like, why are you working? I like who I am. Just leave me alone. No, let's grow. Let's grow. No. Hey, I already did all the schooling I want. I don't need more growing or schooling. I don't need anything else. I'm fine. Just the way I am. I mean, you get the tension in these things, right? So the real question is, how do we create a safe place?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we're going to irritate each other, and we have to learn, and we have to grow. And can we create a safe place? Right? And there has to be then a level of acceptance that you're different. You're not me, and that's okay. And I'm not you, and that's okay. Because if you don't do acceptance, you do anger.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you just do what I told you to do? It's funny. I heard this guy not too long ago saying, I've told her 20 years, she just doesn't do what I told her to do. You know, I want her to lose weight, and I just tell her all the time, I just tell her to do it, just lose weight, that's what I want you to do. Why didn't she listen? You know, God's the authority, and I'm the head. Why are you looking at me like that, Jonathan?
Yeah. Like I said before, who's going to be the most difficult person in your relationship? Like he's got to look in the mirror, you know.
So, and then the whole, I mean, life is hard, right?
Oh, yeah.
And people eat for comfort. And sometimes you put on weight because you eat for comfort. And,
yeah.
And it's a dilemma, and it's a little complicated. It's not like, hey, I told you don't, so don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a little more complicated than that. So we have to have,
even that simplistic advice, what would happen if he said that in the mirror? Do you think he's one that is really
everything he needs to work on and change? Yeah, yeah. Why don't you just?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like it's easy to point out the faults in somebody else and direct them to change. When's the last time you really went on a growth mission yourself to try to improve yourself? You know.
And isn't change hard? Have you?
It's very hard. Yeah.
To change, we like who we are. We designed who we are. We planned it and we executed. And we practice every day being who we are. And you want me to be different? Jeez, that's hard.
It's like, I think it was Dallas Willard who said, your system is perfectly constructed for the results you are getting.
Yeah, that's good.
In other words, it's like, look at whatever results are being produced in your life. Whatever system you've constructed there is constructed perfectly for those results.
Yeah.
So if you don't like the results you're getting, you're going to have to change the system. And obviously, changing a system is way harder than anything else.
So I'm just giving you thoughts and ideas about marriage and the difficulty and mindsets. And so one of the questions is, I know you're going to challenge me, but can you be nice about it? Can you be Christ-like about I know I need to clean up more or save money more or work out more or clean the refrigerator more or do the laundry. Could you be nice about it when you challenge me?
Yeah, I heard, I think it was Ravi Zacharias one time, and he said this statement, and at first I kind of bristled at it because I thought, no, that can't be right. And then the more I thought about it, I'm like, I think that's actually right. And the statement was basically, there's never a good reason to be unkind.
Never.
There's never a good reason to be unkind.
Yeah.
And I mean, at first I was kind of like, wait a second, no, if I want to challenge somebody, I want to... Well, even if I need to challenge somebody, do I need to be unkind about it?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Even when Jesus was, you know, you could try to make the argument, well, man, he drove out the money changers with a whip. Wasn't that being unkind? No, he was being truthful, and he was holding, you know, he's saying, this is not what my Father's house is for, but his words were never unkind. He was never, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, oh, yeah, maybe that's one to chew on for a while about marriage. Is there ever a reason to be unkind to my spouse?
That's good. I should put that on the list. Because the next question is, will you love me? Will you just love all of me? Will you just love me like I am? Because if you think about what Christ does, is as you are, sinner and all, failure, loser, you know, mistake-making person, I still love you.
I think the challenge that some people have with that, and I know I've wrestled with it myself, is there's this very fine line, and I don't even know exactly where it would be put, but there's this very fine line between me saying, Stephen, I fully accept you for everything that you are, all of your brokenness, all of your humanity, all of that. And I also love you. But here's the thing. Love is, I believe, a little bit further. It's larger than acceptance. Because if I truly love you, and I see you in your character, or in your words, or in your actions, essentially heading off a cliff, I have to get in your face. There's a point at which love says, hey, you know what? That's not right. That's not good. That's not for your good. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like...
But even your rule of kindness would apply there, right?
It would still be kind, but it's like there's a point at which I think sometimes we hear that, will you love all of me? And I think sometimes the underlying message is, will you leave me alone on the places where I need to be challenged and just love me? And I think that's a false understanding of love. Because if I actually do love you, I want your highest good at my cost. Mm-hmm. So in other words, I'm willing to sacrifice. I'm willing to maybe even challenge you where it's going to be uncomfortable, where it might, you know what I mean? Like in a marriage, it's going to be, it's not always going to be like, I'm going to.
Right. But I think you can make that point for change, but change is very difficult. And you have to decide, do you go back to love or do you, you know, hold their feet to the fire and push them and prod them, and you know what I mean? And so,
but that's what I'm saying. Like even Jesus in his love of us is saying, you know, unless you leave father and mother and house and job, listen, that's not what it's like to be a disciple of mine.
Right.
If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. You know, it's like there's hard things, and he's saying that's actually love. So I think sometimes there's a grit to love that is not always comfortable, but it's actually good. And so anyway, all I'm saying here is like you said, yeah, change is hard and marriage is difficult, but I think even to understand what it means to love each other in marriage means that we're going to be challenging each other to grow, and that's not always going to be super comfortable.
No, I think that's right in terms of challenging one another. We call each other to higher places.
Yeah.
So we're listing needs. I need a safe place. You know, I need to know that I'm loved. And then I want to be known and loved. Mm-hmm. I want somebody to explore me and pull things out of me and help me see me and love me. Because strangers can love you, but they don't know you.
Yeah.
And if you're in a marriage, there's a sense that I need to work on me in a safe place. And I want you to know that you're going to love me even if I'm damaged or broken or struggling.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to cough a second.
Hey, yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me. So I'm back. All right. So here's some thoughts about marriage. Who I am in public is not often who I really am.
Right.
Have you noticed that I hear this all the time. A woman will say, my husband is so kind at church. If you need anything, he'll do it. He's so kind to everyone. And then he comes home, he closes that door, and he says, in essence, you're on your own. I'm tired. Don't bother me. It's like kindness out there in public, but yeah, not so kind at home.
Yeah. And I think that's in part of getting back to that, you know, will you love all of me? You know, like there may be a point of challenge there, but at the same time, it's like, man, it's the whole package, right?
Yeah.
When you marry somebody, you get all of that, the brokenness and everything.
So these are just observations about people and marriage. One is, I'm going to treat you like I treat me. So if I don't really like to talk, you and I are one. So I don't like to talk, so now you don't like to talk. Okay? Mm-hmm. How, whatever I like, that's what I'm going to do to you, right? If I'm a social being and I want to be out social, then I'm dragging you everywhere socially. I need to go.
Yeah.
Because we think, oh, you're just like me. And the reality is when we find out they're not, they're opposite. And so sometimes the fact that I don't like to talk and you like to talk and you need to talk is going to be a challenge. But my preference is I don't like to talk. Don't you not like to talk too?
Right. And that's part of the challenge. That's part of the challenge is our own beliefs and expectations that we create in that, right? Because now we've created an expectation that if I don't like to talk, then you shouldn't as well. And if you do, yeah, now I'm going to be upset and disappointed. Yeah.
Good. Why are you arguing? Why are you talking? Right. Every time you talk, you're arguing. You're saying something negative. Stop talking. It's like, whoa, I'm trying to work something out here.
Right.
So the third one is we all live today with an identity that we developed in our childhood. Mm-hmm. Right? Because when we were kids, in that context, like I needed to be a pleaser to survive. So I leave that context and I go out in the public and I'm still a pleaser, right? I'm trying to be a pleaser everywhere I go. Well, maybe that's not the best thing.
Yeah.
But that's what I know. So I do the same thing. And until you stop and examine yourself and go, what am I doing? Because sometimes you can tone that back and you should tone that back and not mm-hmm. so work so hard at taking care of everybody all the time. Because sometimes we want the young people to serve and rise up and be caretakers. And so if you're always doing it, you don't give an opportunity for someone else. So we should get to the point where we have the skill that we use it, and sometimes we don't use the skill. But when you're only running on childhood stuff, you just have to do it. You have to do it everywhere you go. You have to be the pleaser, be the caretaker, be the worrier, be the controller, be the perfectionist. Everywhere you go, you have to do the thing you learned to do to survive childhood. And that's like annoying in adulthood.
Yeah. It's a lot of what we talk about when we talk about when we did the whole webinar on emotional training for men, right? Just the idea of at some point, those childhood coping mechanisms, those childhood ways of doing things, they've got to mature into
right.
an adult way of doing yep. them.
And we built them and designed them and planned them in a different context, and they're not working in this context. So we have to back up and examine them.
And that's part of, I think, how we can grow together in our marriage, right? Is can we have an honest enough dialogue where those things are not a point in which we shame one another, but right. a point in which we try to draw each other out and help each other grow.
And I say, hey, don't be the caretaker right now. Just relax. Step back and slow down.
Yeah.
And then we get to create the other part of our development. Because our parents were supposed to tell us, don't be the caretaker all the time. Sometimes you're right. the caretaker, and sometimes you're just patient and wait and let other people lead and get stuff done. And sometimes you're the leader, mm-hmm. and sometimes you're the follower, and you can move around. You can be fluid, and when you're mature, you can do that. But when you only run one program, you just do it all the time everywhere. It's like, can we get to growth now, please? So one of the other rules of marriage is no talking, no connecting.
And you're very specific on this, right? It doesn't say no communicating, no connecting.
That's good. That's
you
good.
You talk about this all the time, right? Yeah. Let's say it. It's no talking.
That's
means
right.
you're not connecting.
And so I have to start talking. I have to tell you about my life. You tell me about your life. We're talking back and forth, and we're learning each other. Then we're connecting. Because people say, oh, we're so close. We don't talk. It's like, you're not that close. You don't know each other. You just coexist, but talking is required for connecting to happen. Mm-hmm. Because and if we start talking, we can start learning and start exploring and start saying, you know, I'm not very good at this. And if you help me, okay, good. Now we're connecting. Right? Yeah. That's the point. It's not just talking about the weather either all day. It's really talking to learn your spouse. But the rule is some people think we don't have to talk to connect. No, no talking, no connecting.
Yeah.
And so the next rule is this: deep talking is usually easier for one of us than the other one. Because it's funny, because this woman said, "Oh my goodness, when we were dating, he let me talk all the time. And I thought, he's so wonderful. He's just being kind. When we get married, he'll be talking too." Well, we got married and he's still not talking.
Yeah.
You know? And she kind of convinced herself into going, "Oh, he's just not talking because he knows I like to talk. So he's just waiting." And it's like, oh no, he's not talking. He doesn't talk. Okay, he's not talking. He's not talking now. He's not talking later. But it's like we convince ourselves of what we want, and we think, oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, no, let's do this now. Let's learn now.
You know what I've found out, too, over the years is like, you know, you mentioned here deep talking will be easier for one than the other. Sometimes that's also based on the subject. So in other words, I wouldn't make it a blanket statement that says all possible subjects of deep talking are easier for one than the other. In other words, I've noticed there's a difference with me and even me and my wife. Like, you know, certain topics she can go way deeper in or wants to go way deeper in than I'm willing to. But there's also some where it's like I'm willing to go there and she's not as willing to go there. So sometimes it's even based on the subject matter of whether or not one of them is going to be better, which is why I think one of the things that we've tried to do, not always successfully, is say, okay, well, if one of us is sort of stronger in that area, let that person be the one to sort of help train the other person in how to talk about that. And give over that sense of like, okay, yeah, I'm not good in this area. Can you help me kind of draw me into that space?
That's beautiful, because then we help each other, right? We both have strengths and weaknesses, and we need all of your strengths, and you need all of my strengths, and we got to work on your weaknesses, we got to work on my weaknesses so that they can get stronger. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Everybody needs praise and acceptance and encouragement. Mm-hmm. And you're going to find some people say, "We never gave compliments in my family.
Oh,
I never got a compliment. I don't give compliments. I don't get compliments. Why do you need compliments?
Yeah.
Why do you need me to praise?"
It's a sign
you,
of weakness, encourage right? Yeah.
You. It's just foreign, you know? Why do I have to do that? That's dumb. Just live and pat yourself on the back. Why do I have to pat you on the back? Pat yourself on the back. That's what I do. I pat myself on. I don't need praise from anybody. But the truth is, everybody, healthy people need to encourage one another and lift each other up and say positive things. And I mean, even Christ, when we were sinners, calls us saints, right? Why? Mm-hmm. To call us up, to encourage us, to call us to high places. And so some people aren't trained very well in that. And it's a habit. And so you learn not to, and you can learn to.
I do want to say something about this too, because I think it probably maybe from about the mid to late 80s, there was a swing of the pendulum so far in the other direction that now there seems to be this idea of praise everything.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to kind of draw a balance here that says, you know, not everything is praiseworthy.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like some things are just part of the regular, normal, you know, daily routine. Like, for instance, I mean, we kind of had house rules around our house growing up with our kids. And it's like everybody's got their particular chore to do, right?
Right.
There might be a sense of appreciation for that, but it's kind of like everybody knows what we're supposed to do. You were supposed to fill the dishwasher.
Right.
We didn't elevate that to the level of like a praiseworthy type of a deal. But it's like, man, when we saw that moment where one of our children extended a totally invited or whatever sense of kindness, or they did a gesture, they went up above and beyond and did something nice for one of their siblings. It's like, hey man, we really highlighted that. Does that make sense? So I think there's a balance even with how we do
praise
and things like that. It's like, because I think some kids nowadays have been raised on so much praise that they don't even know what is and isn't really praiseworthy.
Mm.
It's almost like, hey, Steve, I exist. Why aren't you praising me? You know what I mean? I think in marriage, we do need to call each other up, like you were saying.
Yes.
We do need to say your life matters, and call out those moments that we really see of like, man, that was incredible kindness that you showed. And point where I think it's important. I mean, I know that when I see certain things in my wife and I praise her for those, I'm like, I wish I had more of that.
Mm,
you know, the way you show kindness and the way you lift others up. So
we know our strengths and we try to hide our weaknesses. But we always trip over them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really hide them. They pop out. Whatever your weaknesses are, everybody knows. But you try to avoid them, ignore them, hide them. It's better just to say, oh, yeah, that's a weak area. I'm not very good. But it also takes a very healthy person to be able to admit their weaknesses.
And I think in a marriage, a little bit of what I was just saying a minute ago, if you can recognize your own weaknesses and communicate those well with your spouse and vice versa, I think what can happen is you can realize that a lot of times where you're weak, they're strong.
Yes.
And where they're weak, you're strong. And can we have the humility to say, man, I submit to where you're strong,
and
not try
smart.
To fight, like not try to fight for a sense of control of like, because one spouse may think they should do a particular role or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I've got to fight for that. It's like, well, man, if you suck at that and your spouse is good at that,
just
let it go, man.
Right. That's right. And I think smart men allow their wives to have strengths and use those strengths in the relationship. And
absolutely.
Smart women let the men use their strengths.
Yeah.
So this story, this guy I was talking to broke down crying, and he said, my wife left me. I tried to be in control of my life, and I made a mess of it. I like always doing the right thing, and I tried to be perfect. I tried to make my family perfect also. But in this world, you either pass or fail. That's his world, right? You're good or you're bad. You're right or wrong. I did everything I could to not fail, he said. I avoided my emotions, and I avoided everyone else's emotions. I worked all the time. I hid my feelings. I tried to never have feelings. I thought logic and disconnecting and distance was the way to be safe. And now as I look back, I see that I've stunted myself and I've hurt the people around me on this mission to not be emotional and to do everything right. I was trying to protect me and avoid failure. And in the end, my wife didn't want to be with me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens when we sort of build our house of cards. You know, we kind of construct how we think it should go. And I think the more we try to control a relationship, the more out of control it becomes. Because think about it. What's the foundation of a healthy marriage? Is it not a covenant love relationship? Mm. There's a freedom in that says, I don't have control of this other person. They don't have control of me.
Right.
But by an act of our own will, we're choosing to pour ourselves into one another and choosing to pour out our lives for one another.
Yeah.
And so it's not about control. It's about like,
or getting the outcome I want, or having to have it this way.
And I think it's one of those things, I know this is sort of cliche, but you know, I've seen those, you know, knitted whatever that say, you know, a great marriage is not 50-50. It's, you know, two people giving 100% to each other, that kind of thing. You're in some ways, you're sort of emptying yourself into this other person. And what this guy was experiencing was what happens when you try to say, I want it my way.
Right.
It's going to be my way. And it's like it ends up just falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
So you
understand that was his best attempt. He was doing his best thinking. He wasn't trying to destroy anything. He was just doing what he knew. Control for a good outcome and don't be emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But those are two things that'll mess up another person because they want to be an adult and have some control and they want to be allowed to mess up.
Yeah. So listeners, this has been kind of a shotgun program here, but trying to give you some ideas about what does it take to, you know,
how difficult
marriage can
and
be.
And our beliefs get in the way, and our habits and our past get in the way, and our thinking gets in the way. So it's critical for us to be humble with one another and admit that we're just doing the best we can, and we're opposites, and I can give you grace because I need grace.
And acknowledge the reality of our core needs, that we need to be known,
yes,
and loved. And as we keep pursuing that and trying to grow together in that,
mm-hmm,
because the reality is, you know, we're never in this life going to get to the point where we exhaust even knowing ourselves,
mm,
because we have new experiences and all kinds of stuff, right? Let alone knowing this other person. So can we stay on that adventure? But also when it comes to love,
mm-hmm,
you can't exhaust that either. Like, if I love my wife today, can I say I've exhausted all the possibilities of what it means to love her today? No, because I'm going to get up tomorrow, and then there's going to be more opportunity to love, and so you can't get to the end of love.
That's good.
We hope this has been helpful just for generating some ideas and helping you move forward in this growth journey. As you have questions or just want to share with us where you are on this journey, we'd love to hear from you. So reach out to us at puresexradio.com or on Twitter at puresexradio. And we look forward to seeing you back here again on the program next week.
Thank you. God bless.